This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Thursday, March 28th. Happy Easter week to everybody. Notre Dame football had their last practice before an Easter break. Practice number 6, 9 to go with Blue Gold game on April 20th. And I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, joined by John Bryce from Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated as well. And yesterday, Irish Illustrated conducted an interview with Pete Bevacqua, Notre Dame's new vice president and director of athletics. His previous title was special assistant to the president for athletics. Pete Bevacqua thought that was a pretty cool title, but he's got a new one now. And Tim, it was you and me. Why don't you start and just give some general ideas, some thoughts about meeting with him. He's been very cordial. We've interacted with him prior to yesterday. And so that kind of made it a little bit easier. I think he was familiar with Irish Illustrated's work, and we would anticipate to have a pretty good working relationship with him.
I greatly regret not asking him if he was instead the assistant to the regional manager as opposed to assistant regional manager, because I had a feeling he has watched The Office quite often. But it was a very easy. It was exactly what I thought it would be. It was a conversational interview. Tim and I don't do a lot of. We can't do a lot of them. Zoom started 3 years ago, 4 years ago, but we haven't done a lot of duo Zooms. And the ones we have, I think, have always gone well, but we probably had to prepare more. This was so conversational and easy. We have a couple questions on Bevacqua that I want to hold off on, because I think our final question, I think, is on the interview. I'm going to have a different answer than you are, Tim, on that one. So I want to hold off on that. I thought it was great, though, and Jack was like this at the end as well, how much they have embraced fund and how open they are to it, because there's a lot of questions you can ask the incoming athletic director, but NIL dominates it right now. NIL concerns outside of football are something I look at a lot. I'm probably harping on too much, because it's just really, no one's ever really going to tell you how much is going to go to another sport or person. But I think when he said, let's be honest, football is the driving force of NIL and football is the driving force of sports at Notre Dame, that is where it's going to have to continue to be funneled mostly.
Yeah. And he's, you know, I kept referring to the Wake Up the Echoes episode with Tony Simeone the day before, but he had said that in answer to the question about that, he said they want to be very aggressive in a Notre Dame way as it relates to fund. And it absolutely, and we went on, we talked about national titles. In order to, if you really want to win national titles, you are going to have to be aggressive in a Notre Dame way. And that even that's difficult.
Here's a mea culpa for me. I never considered growing up, and before I had this job 15 years ago, the athletic director of a university is on the hook for his teams to win national titles. But I get it. I totally get it now. And I understand why they make the hirings for that. But there's so many threads and X factors to winning a national title. I just don't, I still am amazed that is where we are in this world, that the best programs, the athletic director's job is to win a football national title. I never thought about that. Did you think about that 30 years ago, Tim?
Never. No, never. And
Brian Kelly's job was to win a national title.
I totally understand it. It's not like Swarbrick just, you know, blew it the whole time. They've been extremely competitive for, you know, more than half a decade here. I get it. We live in a different
world. I get it too.
World.
I just never considered it until outside voices told me.
There's, you know, generations are different from generation to generation. And I'm in a generation older than both you guys, but you know, it's way different. Now, John, I know that you, you watched the Wake Up, the Echoes, episode, and I know you followed this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, to what T.O. was just saying about the AD, remember 30 years ago, as you guys referenced, a lot of the ADs around the major programs were retired former football coaches. We saw it transition in that regard in a number of places, whether there was Barry Alvarez for a long time at Wisconsin, or Doug Dickey held that title for a really long time at Tennessee. There were others throughout the South, Vince Dooley at Georgia. But I always took it to be, you had a retired football coach because football was most important, because football is what drove all the engines even back then. I think now it's shifted much more to a CEO or a CFO type of role because college athletics has become such major business. But the constant has been that football is still the engine on the train. And so you are judged by that, because ultimately you'll have the most coal for your train engine if you're winning a football championship or you're close to winning a football championship. I like the fact that Pete has leaned into that, very transparently leaned into that. He's talked about it in various settings, certainly very directly with you two guys this week, saying we have to win a national championship. We know that. Marcus knows that. And I will say, from a personal standpoint, Pete's already been very active. Pete's been active in trying to help Notre Dame nail down this upcoming new football facility. He's already traveled and visited with some folks. He and Ron Pallas have been around visiting. I think that's significant. And Pete is leaning into the elements that can potentially help take Notre Dame to that next level, and that being facilities and NIL.
You know, like, we had a lot of questions for him, the same questions that everybody else has, but I also felt we had an obligation to treat the interview as an introduction to him. And his background as a kid coming to Notre Dame, I thought it was interesting that he said, you know, it would be cliche for me to say I never expected to be the athletic director of Notre Dame, but that's not really true. I always kind of thought that, if not specifically the athletic director, something involved with Notre Dame athletics. And I just thought that that was kind of neat, because you don't expect to hear that, you know, that kind of story. And we didn't really get into his childhood, but on Wake Up the Echoes, he talked about being a kid and coming to Notre Dame and like trying to interact with the players. Before we went on the air, Tim, you may not have known what I was talking about there, but I was making a joke. Was there some sports writer that said, "Hey, kid, get out of the way. I'm trying to interview the players," meaning me, because he's young enough to have been there when I was already working. But he was great, and I just thought that that was a great story, and it was interesting how the evolution of him becoming the athletic director. I mean, it's something that Swarbrick said, you know, someday maybe you should do this. And then he also had similar conversations with Father John Jenkins as well. So I think it's an excellent fit. His heart is absolutely in the right place with University of Notre Dame. It is a dream job for him. And, I think he's going to do everything he possibly can to live up to that obligation of winning a national title in football. Tim, I agree with you. There's so many factors that an athletic director can only control so much. But look, that's the world that we live in. That's the expectation. And he does not shy away from that expectation.
Yeah, I think I was never naive that the athletic director had to hire successful football coaches. But a national title is different than, well, this athletic director hired a coach that went 11-2, 10-2, 12-1, 11-2, 12-2, 9-3. That's what you're hiring. That's what you're hiring for, though. And then it's the coach's job to not lose, I think, is the best way to say it.
What else stuck out about the interview? We have questions about it. I guess I reduced it to one question near the end because I knew that we would be talking about this in segment one. I thought it was interesting that, you know, he had conversations with Drew Pine and Tyler Buchner that, hey, you know, you're back here and it's an unusual set of circumstances, but you're going to walk away from here, you know, being a graduate of the University of Notre Dame. And it wasn't that long ago that you walked away from that place. We have different times, but, he really gets what it means to be a part of Notre Dame, which, you know, I think us that grew up in it and have had, Tim, you had family at Notre Dame. And I was in the midst of Notre Dame football when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. So he's passionate about it. And that's something that I can really, really relate to.
I agree with someone on our board that mentioned Pete said his dad would get so worked up he had to go for runs during games. Yeah. And he'd have to use a payphone and call him and get picked up to come back. That's funny. I do get a little worked up. I used to get worked up watching games. I'm a statue now. I don't even move unless there's a bad call.
I'm the same way, Tim. I'm just stoic throughout an entire football game press box.
Your sarcasm does not come across well enough on a non-video podcast here. But no, I thought that was great that he had that story about his dad. I've managed to get away from that recently, but it still happens once in a while with the 49ers. And Bryce might remember why that might have happened recently once. I had to walk away from stuff like that.
Well, for the whole
interview, I only have positive memories of that Super Bowl, Tio.
For the whole interview, I think it lasted about 43, 44 minutes, right, Jack? I think it was. We were given a 30 to 45 minute window. I had a stopwatch, which I usually forget to turn on when we start. But I did remember yesterday, and we were right on the limit with them. And you know, if anybody from Notre Dame is listening, Aaron Horvath, some of the people that helped arrange that, we appreciate that opportunity to have that one-on-one or two-on-one with Pete Bavakwa. Other news, football news, important news, one on offense, one on defense. Riley Leonard had ankle surgery, the same ankle that has been giving him trouble, and we'll get into more of that. And then Ben Morrison had shoulder surgery, which as soon as I hear a cornerback, a quality quarterback with shoulder surgery, I'm thinking Cam Hart. Cam Hart had three. This is the first for Ben Morrison, but that's a little bit concerning. We've had some questions about, well, will he be ready for the season? Can we answer that? I mean, I think he'll be
other ready than their tweet saying that he would be.
Yeah, but timetables when he just had surgery, it's very difficult to do that. It's difficult to do that, but it is concerning, both of them.
Yeah, I think the Riley Leonard absence is more concerning just because he needs that time to be getting comfortable with the offensive line, to be communicating with the offensive line, to be developing a rapport with receivers, running backs, with more so with the coaches when they're going through the paces of this spring camp and getting comfortable with Ashton Craig and just their cadence and the snap and the operation and execution of the offense. We know Ben Morrison is splendid. We all hope that he gets back sooner rather than later. I spoke with somebody this week and they're like, that's Notre Dame's best player. That's their best player for next year is what an NFL scout said to me when I was talking to him on the phone this week. So that was very significant. That one, again, we know what Ben Morrison can do. Shoulder, that does make it a little concerning. There's optimism around the Goog from the people I've talked to in that regard. So to me, it's Riley Leonard. Certainly Riley Leonard has a body of work, but he only played one full season at Duke. So you hope this is his injury that he gets out of the way now and stays healthy the rest of his time at Notre Dame.
Yeah, shoulder injuries worry me more for a guy that's going to have to come up and hit to be an All-American. The fact that it's Riley Leonard's second on that ankle, obviously is more concerning than the first time around where you knew he needed it when you saw how he got hurt against Notre Dame. I'm surprised he was taking part in this spring after watching that injury happen. But, I think the concerning thing for me with Leonard, to back JB's point is he needs more work with his unit, and Ben Morrison, if he's healthy, comes in. And I would honestly say you're plug and play if you come back in mid-August, but you're plug and play if you come back in early August. So Riley Leonard, I believe, needs work with the wide receivers. We like them all. We know last year, I don't think this was the real issue, overriding issue, but we know last year there was concern when Tommy Rees left that Sam Hartman was starting anew with a new offense, and that Sam Hartman then after they got into the new offense was concerned about the wide receivers. These wide receivers are better, but Riley Leonard needs time with them. And Riley Leonard's not a finished product as a passer.
No,
he needs time with these guys, and he needs to be healthy enough. Look, he's going to be, if he's healthy, he's let loose to run 20 times at A&M, but they're going to have to decide he can't run 20 times against some other teams on the schedule.
Yeah. Of course, the three of us were at football practice on Wednesday. You guys had offense, defense. I've got a story that'll wrap up my combing through the newcomers observing some of the young guys. And again, somebody said, well, you can't judge it based upon, you know, five periods of football practice. I get that. But, you know, it's more of an accumulation of knowledge on these players, having studied them in high school and then trying to do a fast check on what we're seeing in practice. So we'll wrap up that series tomorrow. But why don't you guys jump in, offense, defense, some of the things from yesterday that you feel are pertinent to mention and discuss.
I like watching the linebackers play. I've said that multiple times now. The promise of the KVA Osbury duo is something to really monitor as August progresses with Kaiser as the constant. I know they're going to find a role for Jalen Snead. I'm so intrigued as to what the role will be as a linebacker for Jalen Snead, but they're going to find a role to put him one-on-one going after quarterbacks and maybe nickel roles where look, Jalen Snead getting to the flat is and getting around the corner is fast as heck. Because I don't think there's a lot less playing linebacker and diagnosing 10 different things when you have that role. So I think that would be great for him. I think the linebackers could be really, really good, assuming Kaiser's healthy. And I'm going to stop comparing them to last year's guys just because they were 23 years old. Of course, those guys were going to be good. This is a fun new era to watch them. And other than that, I want to see Gabriel Rubio back, because if Donovan Heinisch is your fifth, that's a really good defensive interior. If Donovan Heinisch is your fourth, you have to pray nobody bigger gets hurt. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes total sense. You got to have that depth.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in here ahead of you, JB, since we're talking about interior defensive alignment. I thought Devin Houston looks much, much different than he did when we saw him last fall. He's trimmer. He's moving much better. When we watch five periods and it's not really live except for a handful of plays and he doesn't get an opportunity in there, I don't know where he is in that process, but I will say that he's taken a significant step forward physically, whereas, you know, now he's at least in a position to compete better than he did last year. So if you're looking for further depth, I was hoping Sean Sevillano Jr. would be trimmer now and be able to move. He's a long way away. They list him at 339. When a guy's that big, it's hard to know what is realistic, but he has got to lose, a significant amount of weight before he's a viable candidate inside.
Seeing Cole Mullins in there. Go ahead, John.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Absolutely. Go ahead, Tio.
Seeing Cole Mullins in there was interesting for me.
Yeah, that's part of what I'm writing up tomorrow.
I think
they were in like a three-man front with a Traore and a stand-up position, and Mullins, who you don't consider to be that big, he's listed at 239, was in a three-point stance in a defensive end in a 3-4 type look.
Yeah, it was a unique situation. I regret not asking Al Washington about Houston. I asked him about everybody that we needed to. I told this to a colleague yesterday, and this does not mean I'm correct, but I think Brennan Vernon's journey from bad weight coming in, or when he signed, not coming in, bad weight when he signed, to looking like $1 million last August, but having to put more functional weight and strength back on to defensive tackle means people should never read that Brennan Vernon's not rotating in or something. I think he's growing into his absolute future 3-year at Notre Dame contributing body, but I don't think he is in it comfortably right now. Is that kind of a fair way when a guy loses it all and puts it back?
I think it is. I think he's going to grow into it. I really like the way the guy carries himself.
Yeah.
On the football field, he's not big enough yet. They need Gabe Rubio back. They absolutely need Gabe Rubio back for this season.
Yeah, and again, to make the point that we make probably every week, there's also there will be a two-week window, April 16th to April 30th, where potentially they can address one or two things in the transfer portal if they feel necessary coming out of that spring game on the 20th. And so they will still have 10 days of time left to assess things, see who's in the portal, and potentially make an addition there. As we shift to the offensive side of things, I wanted to pose you guys mainly a rhetorical question, but the numbers 1 and 1A quarterbacks were out of practice yesterday. what are we talking about this time a year ago if there's neither Sam Hartman nor Steve Angeli on the practice field? Like, neither Sam Hartman nor at that point Tyler Buchner on the practice field. Oh, and it's a brand new offensive coordinator. It would have been an absolute avalanche of clouds. No, the sky wouldn't have fallen. The sky would have enveloped all of us with doom and gloom.
Yeah, wow. I was just interested. I almost wanted that to happen for a I want to see Angeli, but I've seen Angeli. I kind of want to see Minchie and Cargo at it a little bit in that open practice we're going to have. But I mean, it's crucial that Angeli gets the reps too, of course. But from a selfish, I don't get to see these guys enough, and I'm not going to get to see them enough in August. I do kind of want to see those guys go at it. But Angeli was just sick, so he'll be back. They're off for a week.
Yeah, I don't know that we really addressed that here. I mean, we did yesterday, obviously. But for those that did know, and not only was Riley Leonard not there, but Steve Angeli was declared sick by the university. And so he wasn't there either. So Minchie was number one and Carr was number two, and they were getting a lot of throws in there. But a finer point to your point, JB, I think they need to seriously look in the portal and see if they can get a big body, a defensive tackle, because if for some reason you lose Howard Cross or Riley Mills along the way, by the way, both of those guys are in the top 10 of Pro Football Focus's interior defensive line. I noted this in today's Thursday Thoughts that you've got those two guys on the line. You have Kaiser's their number 7 linebacker, which is incredible considering the number of snaps that he's had, but it's based upon his productivity, Tim, which you always consistently pointed out, his productivity per snap. And then of course you have Xavier Watts, who's listed as the number 4 safety. So Al Golden with a standout player or two on each level of the defense, and then some other really, Ben Morrison, of course, at corner, some other really promising players. It's got a chance to be a great defense, but these minute things like that extra defensive tackle or the further development of Brennan Vernon by the fall, that may be a little premature. It's probably more 2025, but he may have to play. That could realistically happen if you get nicked up with one or two guys on the interior.
Yeah, a couple more quick offensive notes. I did notice Kevin Bauman out there yesterday, not really participating, but very active, engaged with his teammates, had a helmet with him as he came out onto the field. Another thing I noticed was Mitchell Evans doing some instruction with some players and almost doing some peer coaching. So you just like to see that engagement from guys who are hurt but still able to be around their teammates. Billy Shrouth had a good practice, especially as I went outside and studied the offensive line and observed them a little more closely. He drew praise from Rudolph a couple of different times. I thought that was interesting. We heard Dylan McCullough talking about Aeneas Williams and how he looks, and he also said, look, physically Kedron Young, he said, you guys see him, he looks good. He said he's a presence, he's a big body out there, and Dylan McCullough made it clear that they expect Kedron to be back much sooner rather than later.
I think sometimes, Tim, you and I we joke about McCullough. I mean, McCullough is a extremely confident football coach, very, very confident in his ability to teach guys. And he has a track record to prove it. But walking away from yesterday, and this isn't really anything new, but I'm impressed. Dylan McCullough truly is invested in his running backs and cares about them and wants nothing but great things for them. And we saw him again out there with Audric Estime. He was assisting Audric Estime on his pro day stuff. I'm really impressed with how engaged and how genuinely concerned for the well-being of his running backs, that Dylan McCullough is.
I'll let JB speak to this, but my one comment on that was McCullough asking Estime, did I prepare you for all of your interview questions the fact, I think is great. That illustrates your point that in Estime said I was overprepared. So that's what you're supposed to be. That's not a bad thing if people are wondering at home.
Incredible. He said, Estime said, yeah, I had bullets left in the chamber. For me, and you guys have touched on it, but the care factor there from Dylan for his players and also the confidence factor. So think about, he's demanding. He coaches those guys hard. We see it. He likes to call it his lab. He invents drills that I don't think any of us has seen necessarily in other places. But he does that. So imagine if you go through camp with Dylan, if you go through practice every day with Dylan and you do earn his praise, and Dylan has an effervescent confidence about him. Once you earn that, I think that's why we see Notre Dame's running backs playing with such confidence, because they have a confident position coach who empowers them with confidence. And I'll continue to say it. I expect Dylan McCullough to be a head coach within the next 2 years, whether that's starting out in the MAC or wherever. He has a command presence about him that we see every time we interact with him, that his players see on the daily. And his production is undeniable. And again, it's every bit as tough a position to coach and keep guys happy, if not tougher, in my opinion, than the wide receiver room, if you're doing it the right way. And Notre Dame has built a running back room the right way with Dylan McCullough, and he's kept those guys happy. You've had one guy transfer out in Logan Diggs, and that was seeing the writing on the wall, in my opinion.
Wrapping up segment one, I want to mention that the Notre Dame women's basketball team plays at 2:30 Eastern time on Friday in Albany, New York. They are in the Sweet 16. They're the number 2 seed in their bracket against number 3 seed Oregon State. I thought Notre Dame's defense against Mississippi Monday, I guess it was, really just disarmed them. Notre Dame took a 17-point lead at halftime. I kind of went through the motions a little bit in the second half because they were up so much, but I thought their defense took Mississippi out of the game. Offensively, Notre Dame's playing very, very well. I will caution that Oregon State has 10 six-footers on their roster. They have a 6'4 and 6'3 player on the front line. And Notre Dame's kryptonite, if they have one, is being able to contend with that kind of size. So we'll see what happens there. The winner of the Notre Dame-Oregon State game plays the winner of the number 1 overall seed in the tournament, South Carolina, against number 4 seed Indiana. One step at a time, Notre Dame versus Oregon State on Friday. Coming up, segment 2, Burning Up the Boards.
Welcome back to segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question comes from Manantai. Hope springs eternal, but let's be negative for a moment. We are Notre Dame fans after all. So what has you most concerned moving forward? Is it the lack of continuity or health at important position groups, such as quarterback and tight end? The lack of demonstrated success on the offensive line, or the injection of unproven players at important positions? He lists safety, linebacker, and tackle.
Yeah, for me, I would, I would just choose offensive line, because I think there's 22 combined starts among the projected starters, and 13 of those belong to Pat Coogan. And I think it has a chance to be a good offensive line. I like Joe Rudolph as a coach. I like the personnel that they have out there, generally speaking. But it's offensive line, and I don't care who you are. We've talked about this before, Alabama. When you're inexperienced on the offensive line as a whole, there are going to be weeks where things are going to bog down because of your offensive line. So, yeah, the quarterback situation, I think we've all gained a level of confidence that if Steve Angeli is a starter, he's probably the more accurate of the two quarterbacks right now throwing football. I don't think it's a huge gap. But if you ask me, if I had to say one is absolutely more accurate throwing the football than the other, I would say Angeli. So a lot of confidence based upon very little playing time, not just the Sun Bowl, but he did play well when he was given opportunities during the season. We have a question about Gino Guidulli and his role in that. But for me, I would say offensive line, simply because that's the nature of the game. And there's going to be some games here where it's going to bog down, because that's the way it works.
For me, it would be the inability for the presumptive starter or the potential starter, Riley Leonard, to bond and have cohesion with that offensive line this spring, and also be learning Mike Denbrock's system on the go while developing that continuity and cohesion with the offensive line. So that's the one for me. Yeah, it's absolutely a legitimate concern on the offensive line. The other positions are not as concerning to me. but as we discussed yesterday in instant analysis, when you look at the sum of the parts of that offensive line, you feel a little bit better 1 through 10 about Notre Dame's OL group, I think, than maybe you did even a year ago. Whereas a year ago, you go into it with what you felt were going to be 2 bona fide stars in Joe Ald and Blake Fisher, but then a bunch of question marks, I think, in several other spots. I think there are fewer question marks. There's just not 1 or 2 bona fide stars right now. But for me, I just think you can't put a price tag value on what it would mean for Riley Leonard to be healthy and going through spring in an active manner. He's still participating. I do want to make that clear from everyone I've spoken to. And we saw him out on the practice field. He's still very engaged. He's still dialed into the meeting rooms. He's still doing the things he can learn without from a mental rep standpoint without being able to take those physical reps right now.
I'm concerned about all of those things. The one thing I'm not concerned about is injection of unproven players at safety and linebacker. I just think that's college football and they have good players to step in, and it's not as, plus the unproven player at safety. I mean, there's Rod Hurd is going to be one of the unproven players you're talking about at safety. I think he'll be fine. And I
they're not unproven in the start.
They're not unproven in that way. As I talked about, I like the linebackers. I'd be worried about the linebackers if they didn't have their quarterback, Jack Kaiser. So my main thing is, as I said, Leonard working with his entire offensive unit. That includes the line. If you spend the whole spring and part of the summer with Steve Angeli as your one, Minchie as your two, and Carr as your three, and then as soon as Riley Leonard comes back, you're trying to get Riley Leonard ready. It was some wasted time in the offseason that you wanted. Remember, when we heard Riley Leonard had surgery, meaning he would come back at some point during the spring, we're like, oh, cool, no problem. Well, this second one, when he comes back at some point in August, if that's the case, that might not be the case. But if he's back at fully healthy on August 10, is it enough time? I don't know.
Yeah, I think, well, we've got more Riley Leonard questions, so we'll dive into them as we go.
Yeah, a question from Andy Davis. Is it fair to now have concerns about Leonard's ankle? A second procedure makes it feel more serious beyond something that was nagging. Is there a path where Leonard opts for a full corrective measure and finds himself with a medical red shirt?
I think it would probably be premature to speculate in that regard. Since the formal news of the injury and subsequent surgery disclosed by Marcus last Saturday, tried to talk with some folks around the sports, and we know that as I did instant analysis last Saturday. I had just hung up with a coach, talked this week to a college athletic football trainer for a football program. She talked about 4 to 6 weeks should be a natural timeline for recovery, especially someone like Riley Leonard, who has been injured, who has been dealing with, so they know they need to take the time to heal. They need to slow the process down. She talked about it being an open reduction internal fixation to help strengthen and allow the ankle to heal. So if the 4 to 6 week timeline is adequate and accurate, as we were told last week, then I think the concerns are mitigated, and you expect they get some time off in May and then they report back. So I think as long as Riley Leonard is back and ready late May, 1st of June, when they really ramp up their summer workouts, that to me is key.
We have a question from Noah, the intern, that we didn't want to include, but we were asked this question while we were walking by a colleague.
Well, the reason it's on there is because it is Noah, the intern.
Yeah.
Who joins Tom, the intern.
What's the likelihood that Steve Angeli starts week zero over Riley Leonard? I mean, I think it's still low, but it's higher than it was a week and a half ago.
Yeah. You know, we talked about this in this analysis after we had met with Marcus Freeman, that, you know, I mean, Steve, it's good for the Notre Dame quarterbacks room, but bad for Riley Leonard that this is happening. But
it might be bad for the offense.
Sure. I mean, it's bad for Notre Dame in general, but the quarterbacks room. I mean, Steve Angeli. I would just be curious as to what's going through his head now. It's like,
yeah, that's okay. Yeah, here's this. Right, I don't think Steve Angeli was going to transfer out this year, but now I am positive Steve Angeli won't transfer out.
Well, I'm not going to say positive, but
well,
I think
it would have to be somebody comes along from Power Five and says, I mean, here's all the money we can possibly give you. And I'd be like, all right, good idea, because Riley Leonard's probably coming back. Right. But that
probably doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he's gotten offers.
Yes.
Probably not all the money like he's an established, you know. Right. Time.
Well, and tying it into the opening of this week's podcast and talking about Notre Dame leaning into the fund, there's more than one quarterback getting paid at a lot of places in college football right now. So you want to keep Angeli around. You make sure the NIL deal is attractive to him as well. To Noah's question, a good, fair question. I still think it's a low likelihood, but T.O. said it best. It's exponentially higher, I think, than what it was 8 days ago.
Yeah, and a pat on the back for Noah, the intern. It's Noah Frizzy, by the way, but we go by the
intern. No, it's Noah, the intern.
Okay, yeah, Noah, the intern.
We got to do better than that. We can't have Tom, the intern, and Noah, the intern. We got to do better than that.
He's the assistant. Noah's assistant to the intern? Is that what we're doing now? We're going all the way through the...
Well, he's assistant to the traveling secretary.
Yes, assistant to the traveling secretary.
Noah stepped in for Tom Zwiller, the intern, yesterday doing video and did a sensational job.
So now he needs NIL money, is what you're trying to say. Now everybody needs NIL money.
Great. We've got two top-notch interns in Tom and Noah. Moving on to the next question, Jay Bolt 250. What were your thoughts on Marcus Freeman's answer to the question of whether he would approve of throwing on third and one? I thought he had a great answer, and it seems like he is shifting his offensive mindset a little bit. This was something that I asked last Saturday, and as a offensive line driven team or offense, as he likes to say, he says, as long as they get the first down, that's all that matters. And as he pointed out, and you did, Tim, as well, a lot of times when they were in heavy personnel and they didn't get it done, so you might as well go ahead and throw it if that gets the job done.
I really think it was personnel driven more than Freeman being obstinate about wanting to run the ball on third and short. I think there's more personnel than him saying we are going to dominate on third and one by running the ball every time.
No, I agree, but the offensive and defensive line phrase is, I think that is his philosophy. But with the arrival of Mike Denbrock and the evolution of Marcus Freeman as a head coach, you've got to be a little bit more open-minded about that. As Denbrock said, pounding your head against the wall. The bottom line is, are you punting on the next down or is it first and 10? And the latter, of course, is the most important thing. I understand about, you know, wanting to establish a line of scrimmage and impose your will. And I'm in my 60s. Believe me, I understand. I was covering Lou Holtz where everything was, you had to run the ball in short yardage situations because that was a test of your manhood under Lou Holtz. The game has changed. There's more that you can do offensively, and it's more important that it's first and 10 than fourth down and punting.
We hear Marcus Freeman talk all the time about challenge everything. I think he challenges himself to evolve as a coach, to become a better coach. And here's another point that I would probably hammer home. Yeah, the personnel is an excellent point, especially when you had a guy like Audric Estime last year, although you weren't as proven on the interior of your line as what you wanted to be. The other thing I would say is you now have Mike Denbrock and you're fully comfortable with Al Golden and you know you're keeping Al Golden. I think that changes your mindset as well. You know how much more you've seen Al Golden's defense be elite. You can trust him more to have the ability to take some different approaches on third and short and believe you can get the first down, but also believe in your defense if you don't get the first down and you do have to punt. I just think that if Notre Dame is a playoff team this fall, as it should be, and advances in the playoffs and who knows what happens, I think we'll look back and say the way that Notre Dame went and pursued Mike Denbrock and the way that Notre Dame locked in Al Golden and committed basically $18 million and 4 years apiece to those two guys will be a part of Jack Swarbrick's legacy.
Yeah, and Tim, your point taken. It was personnel driven. There's no doubt about it.
You throw to Merriweather and the other guys when it was third exactly. and two on a slant. What are you and thinking?
And oftentimes the criticism of Tommy Rees, you can criticize him for maybe not assisting enough in the whole recruiting process and getting better quarterbacks and choosing the right quarterback as opposed to not J.J. McCarthy.
I didn't think he was making the podcast today. That's a tough one.
But interesting the commentary on him and where he's going to go in the draft.
I want to go back to the third and one thing though, because like you're still an offensive line driven program. You got to get to third and one. You got to protect on third and two to do these things. You have to execute it. You're going to run on third and one when you have an advantage. When you're playing the best defensive lines in the country and you have an even and it's even, maybe you should pass. And it doesn't mean throw a 2 yard slant on third and one. It means attack for 15 more yards. So instead of first and 10 at the 45, you have first and 10 at their 25. Like there's a lot of ways to attack on third and one. That's not playing soft horizontal football, right? You can attack on third and one.
Agreed.
As well.
Agreed. And I think Mike Denbrock will do that. I don't want to I feel like sometimes I'm overselling Mike Denbrock, but I've got a lot of faith in what he's bringing to the equation. Now, moving on to a question from Irish Rhino. Shouldn't we expect to see an improved Clarence Lewis this upcoming season? I feel like he is getting overshadowed a bit at nickel. Has he reached his ceiling, or do you think the coaching staff can push him to new heights? What limits him from doing so?
I would pay Clarence Lewis extra NIL money to make sure he is on my team to be the backup nickel, the starting dime safety, which is like a third or fourth safety, and a backup cornerback to Benjamin Morrison. But I don't want Clarence Lewis to be... I think Notre Dame's better off all those roles for Clarence Lewis and special teams. And you can come in at any point and help you when something happens. But I don't think Notre Dame's better if Clarence Lewis is a starter at any of those positions.
I agree. He made a nice play Wednesday.
And he should. It's his fifth year. He's played against Devontae Smith. He should make some plays against Micah Gilbert and Kenny Minchie. But that's why I want him on the team, because he can make plays. But I don't think it's 500 snaps is going to be a good way for Clarence Lewis to make plays.
John, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. If Clarence Lewis stacks a whole bunch of plays like what we all saw Wednesday, where he broke on that pass, and it wasn't a bad pass. I noted maybe it was a half second late, but he had to be in good position, and he was, and he made a great play on the ball, and he broke up the ball. If we see a bunch more of those April 13th, when we get to see a lot of football that day, then again, he's played a lot of ball at Notre Dame. I think you want him effective and you want Clark effective, and I don't really care who's 1A and 1B in that scenario.
Hey, I got to say, Wednesday, you know, I've been critical of Jordan Clark, and I haven't seen it. I saw something on Wednesday. I saw a guy that was quick on his feet, looked healthy, really, really good in short space. I'm not going to say anything beyond that. We saw a glimpse of him Wednesday, and it's the best that I've seen him, including watching a whole bunch of Arizona tape.
It is fair to say about these players, like Tariq Bracey wasn't good until he was good. He got good his senior year. Clarence Lewis can get very good his graduate season. He's had other good moments, of course.
Now, there's a cap on how much ability Clarence Lewis has.
Yeah, yeah. But I think he greatly aids Notre Dame's team. Like, every defensive coach on Notre Dame wants Clarence Lewis to stay with Notre Dame as a reserve.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Question from Maz 1515. Put a grade on Gino Guiduli's first season. Seemed like he couldn't break Hartman's bad tendencies. Neither could Hartman. But Angeli looks vastly improved in 1 year. The QB room appears stacked, and you can tell there's a different philosophy when it comes to the QB recruits. There's a lot of reading into
Gino. Yeah, that's a great question, but there's only one. I mean, I think he's a really good quarterbacks coach, and he has four good quarterbacks, but he didn't recruit any of them. He's going to make them all better. But Hartman didn't get better, so there's a ding. I mean,
he came in with 5 years of experience. I'm sorry, I'm going to put a lot of that on Sam Hartman. No,
Sam Hartman has plenty of blame too. But let's go way back. Like, this is not a fair example because Quinn wasn't good. But remember the difference when Charlie Weiss becomes Brady Quinn's de facto quarterback coach from 1 year to the next? I mean, that didn't happen with Gino Guiduli. Sam Hartman did not get better at all. Everybody else got better. I don't know. I think he does a great job, but Sam Hartman didn't get better. So it's partly on Hartman and partly on Guiduli, don't you think? He's the starting quarterback for all the games that he's
stunk. It's never one thing. Like we always say, but I give Steve Angeli a lot of credit, but I have to give Guiduli credit too, because Angeli played, he practiced and he played in games like he believed in himself and that he was good. Not just the Sun Bowl. In earlier opportunities, Notre Dame's backup quarterback got more opportunities than we've seen in a long time, barring an injury to the starter.
You got to give Gino credit for that more than Reese, because Angeli was an afterthought still on scout team when Reese was still with Notre Dame.
Yeah. John?
Do you guys get Hartman out of games? Is that possible? I know the Louisville game is hard to take him out of, but like the...
I just think... We're seeing it right now in terms of needing a second quarterback you can depend on. I think being proactive sooner rather than later is what a number of college coaches do not do well enough.
Yeah.
And I think we all wanted to see Angeli into the game much sooner. All the way back to Ireland, we thought Angeli could have started the third quarter and gone from there. So I think, you have to be mindful. You have to be intentional of getting these guys more work, especially as we hear how much separation there is, especially when the season unfolds, with what the first team quarterback is getting from a rep standpoint versus everybody else. So I think you have to have a deliberate mindset of trying to get guys into games sooner and with more frequency, because when's the last time Notre Dame had a guy go through the entire, I know Hartman had banged up and did whatever last year, but I just think you make all these contingency plans and try to execute them everywhere except quarterback, it makes no sense to me.
I know. I agree. There are some things that don't make sense. It's also hard to take out your $1 million free agent quarterback and not have it look absolutely terrible, to be fair.
It was terrible when they need him the most in those two particular games. So I'm not a big fan.
Do you agree, Tim? Like, taking him out is a tough thing too. I don't want to use political, absolutely. But it's hard to take out your $1 million quarterback. Yeah.
To your point, John, I'm not a big fan of putting in a backup to start the second half, but in general, point taken, there were opportunities a little bit earlier. Question from Andy Higgs, favorite freshman who has a chance to start this year.
I don't know if he has a chance to necessarily start. I think he has an increasing chance to carve a role. Bryce Young, he's fun to watch. When you can say a guy's fun to watch on a practice field where you might see 25 or 30 minutes and you're not even in full gear yet, I think that says something. And Bryce Young is just this fluid space eater who has extreme football IQ and extreme physical gifts. So for me, it would be Bryce Young.
Let's change the question. I mean, starting.
I don't have a chance to start freshman other than KVA. And
yeah, I mean, let's change it to a freshman with a chance to make a really significant contribution this year.
KVA, yeah. KVA is mine.
I avoided saying this in segment one, and I've talked about him before. Micah Gilbert is outstanding, and he probably won't start a game for Notre Dame this year. I don't care how many receivers they have. That kid is ready to play.
He is, but Jordan Faison wasn't even there. Jaden Greathouse, Jaden Thomas, Jaden Harrison, Chris Mitchell, and Bo Collins. It's like, they are deep, man. It's hard to.
I understand, but if you're good enough to play, you need to give him some reps.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree with that. But man, there's a lot of dudes that can play a little bit.
I just like, and you saw the video that Notre Dame put out. That's what I saw the day one when we walked out there. Micah Gilbert's running around. It's like, who's that junior wearing number 14 yes. playing?
He does carry. He has a Christian Gray last year feel to him where you're like, that guy's got to play. Yeah.
Gilbert, Billy Amuasa, and Bryce Young, I think, are the easy choices for us there. Question from Coach Aguilar, who's been making our podcast here in recent weeks. With L. Golden in year three and the arrival of Mike Denbrock, does Notre Dame once again have a Charlie Weiss-like schematic advantage?
Well, it's not I'll show. I'm revealing my hand here that I obviously hadn't read that far down to see that question because I've already given my opinion on the impact of Denbrock and Golden. So I will defer to both of you gentlemen.
Yeah, I think the Golden's return should not be cannot be overstated. So, I mean, we felt he was coming back since November. So I guess that's why it's not as shiny new toy feeling. But the fact that they're in year three under Al Golden. The improvement in year two from year one to Al Golden, they could have a really good defense because you have an All-American at the front, a potential All-American next to him, a really, really, really good player at the second level and two All-Americans at the third level. So that's a quality group.
Yeah. They have a schematic advantage against most people they go against. Not every time. I haven't studied the coordinators yet of the opponents. I'm sure they'll match wits with somebody that's really, really good. But yeah, they do have a schematic advantage with those two guys running the show, especially Golden, because he's been at Notre Dame. He's proven it. He's got those guys back. I think they're both going to do a really good job.
Do you guys know the irresistible force and movable object, that whole theory? You know who A&M hired? You know who Mike Elko, one of the better defensive minds, hired as a defensive coordinator, don't you?
I do.
Jay Bateman. Man.
Jay Bateman. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I was wrong when Jay Bateman was at North Carolina, but I think he proved how poor he was. Now, the advantage that Jay Bateman
coach is pretty good.
The advantage that Jay Bateman has is he's got Mike Elko as his head coach, so that will help.
And better personnel than he had at North Carolina.
Yeah, very true. We have a basketball question from M. Welp 24. And that is, I see Micah Shrewsbury and Stafford in a mix for multiple players in the portal. Besides a big who can score in a post, what are they looking for in that second transfer spot? What's the ceiling for the 24-25 season as they hit their mark in the portal? Late last week, I wrote a story. It was a men's basketball recruiting list, grad transfer list. And we stated that they want a big, and I think Josh Cohen, the 6'10" center at UMass, is a strong possibility. He is a below the rim player, but he is very creative in finding ways to score around the basket and quick when he does that. To answer the question, the second player that they want in the transfer portal is another guard, an experienced guard. They're aware that they may not get a guy that came, you know, average 18 points a game because they had two freshmen this past year playing in the backcourt that were pretty darn good. But they want that the second, they want a big, and they want a second experienced backcourt player in the portal.
Yeah, and that second player, the perimeter player, as you alluded to, he doesn't need to have averaged 17, 18 points a game, but you hope he comes in and at some point in time has scored 15, 16, 18 points in a game so that you can see some actual productivity there and project some standard, some consistent productivity for him. We touched on this as they were making their run to end the season and finish very well. I think 5-3 at one point, 6-4 over their final 10. Do what they need to do in the portal, continue to grow these guys. Burton and Shrewsbury particularly should both be better next year. I thought J.R. Konecny, when he was healthy, made some significant strides this year. I expect this to be a bubble team next year. I expect Notre Dame to go into the final weeks of February and into the ACC tournament squarely in the conversation for a potential NCAA tournament bid.
And Tim, let me jump in there. I want to throw some names out. They are no longer recruiting any class of 2024 guys. They've got three coming in led by Sir Mohammed, but I think the guys at the front of the class of 25 list are power forward Trent Sisley from Lincoln City, Indiana, power forward Cam Ward from Upper Marlboro, Maryland, shooting guard Braylon Mullins from Greenfield, Indiana, center Christian Gerdak from Washington, D.C. The key there is if they get a big, it needs to be a grad transfer that just has 1 year. If they get a big like that, Christian Gerdak has that Notre Dame has a good chance of him choosing Notre Dame. And then the last one is Zarian Robinson, a point guard from Indianapolis, Indiana. Most of those guys are Indiana players. Micah Shrewsbury is an Indiana native. He will recruit heavily in Indiana presently and moving forward.
And Tim, when you say below the rim post player, that's fine. That's what Paul Atkinson was. You going to give me another Paul Atkinson?
No, I think he's even further below the rim though than Paul Atkinson. he's a little bit unorthodox, and there's some other guys that, like, I would like to have seen them have a shot at, but the kid from Harvard, I thought,
his name
coming to me right now. I was going to include three guys on the list, one from Pepperdine. I think he just committed to Gonzaga, but those guys aren't going to work out for Notre Dame. Cohen from UMass is a proven player that would give you consistent scoring and be a presence in the paint.
I need a definition of below the rim. Is it freshman year Luke Herangode or perhaps Scott Paddock? Because there is a difference in the below the rim action there, Tim, as well. So,
well, I'm not gonna say Herangode.
I'm just joking with you. Yeah. He was a revelation that bowl in the China shop his first year, man.
No,
that was
better than more productive than Scott Paddock was, but not quite Luke Herangode. We're going to wrap up today with a question from D.A. Dixon, 408. Was there anything specific from the Pete Bavakwa interview that you think fans should be excited about? We kind of wore this topic out in segment one, but hey, the question was already on the list. So
no, this is, I saved it. I saved my answer for this The number one thing, and I asked the question of him about undergraduate transfers that are fits that aren't freshmen and grad students. And will there be progress in this? When he said he believes there is a movement of good faith and basically logic to undergraduate transfer fits coming to Notre Dame, that's all anyone that has ever followed a Notre Dame major sport could ever ask for, is if Notre Dame could get in a good fit that's a freshman, sophomore, junior, or senior, why would he not be allowed in? That's great.
That's a game changer.
That is the game changer. Good faith and logic is all you need. We're not saying they can get everybody in because obviously the person has to get into school. But the good faith and logic, as opposed to here's the transcripts, I have to line up against this transcript. No, there's one problem here. Sorry, he can't come to Notre Dame. What do you? Oh, he has a 4.0 at Stanford. Nope, can't get into Notre Dame. That is some stuff you don't need.
It's. I think we talked about this before. Cormac Ryan had difficulty getting into Notre Dame transferring from Stanford. Well, that's what Jack Swarbrick said. Come on.
Yeah, that's just.
And he did so get
that, yeah, that's a great one, T.O., especially when we're transitioning to that question directly out of a question about Micah Shrewsbury and basketball. You want that group to have a chance to truly compete for an NCAA tournament bid next year. Then you hope that you can start having an ability to expand the pool of potential candidates that are transferring into your program. You would hope the same thing for Neil Ivey and Sean Stifler as he tries to steady baseball and get it turned forward. All those people. For me, Pete Bavakwa's early interactions and what I've heard over the last few weeks, the fact that he's already traveling and meeting with some people, he's very facilities forward, particularly as it comes to football, and he is NIL forward. And if you're a Notre Dame fan, I would think both of those elements are pretty appealing to you.
Gentlemen, thanks for your time today. We're going to wrap up Irish Illustrated Insider with that. To our listeners, thank you for joining us, and a happy Easter weekend to all. Until next week, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, John Bryce, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.